Les colloques du Collège de France.
It's a great pleasure for me to welcome Francisca Martinez-Real. Francisca comes from the Institute of Developmental Biology in Sevilla, Spain. And Francisca will tell us about the regulatory mechanisms underlying volume adaptations in moles.
Thank you, Denny. So in my lab, we investigate a very fundamental question in the Ivo-Divo field, as also Henrik mentioning, which is how do genomic changes result in developmental phenotype and evolutionary adaptation? Essentially, how all this huge phenotypical diversity that we observe in nature is encoded in the genome of the species. And we are particularly interested in studying the non-coding genome. Why? Because, as we know, the protein coding genes occupy only 2% of the genome. So this means that on one hand, mutation or variation here is less likely to happen, but on the other hand, it's going to be more detrimental effects. However, variation in the remaining 98% of the genome is going to be more likely to happen, and it's going to be more tolerated during development, as it could affect only a specific tissue or developmental time point. And also, we know that this non-coding genome is essential to tell the genes where, when, and how much to be expressed. So how is this gene regulation by the non-coding elements? So in order to the genes to be expressed, normally they are controlled by several cis regulatory elements or enhancers that can be located up to 100 of kilobases away from their target gene. But we also know that in order to activate transcription, the enhancer and the gene, they need to be in close proximity, physical proximity. And this is achieved thanks to the 3D chromatin folding of the genome, in a way that this enhancer that has tissue-specific activity, they come in close proximity to the promoter of the target gene and give rise to this complex pattern of expression that we usually see in the developmental genes. And some years ago, thanks to the development of the chromosome conformation capture technique, and in particular the Hi-C, we could study this 3D chromatin folding. And when Hi-C was applied to different cell types and tissues, several properties were revealed. Like the vertebrate genome is divided into the so-called topologically associated domains, or TATs. TATs are represented as these triangles that are basically matrix of interaction, which means that every dot is showing the frequency of interaction between two points into the linear genome. And the more red, the higher is the frequency of interaction. So in a way, these TATs facilitate the enhancer promoter communication. Also, usually, the TATs are separated one another by these boundary elements, which restrict the interaction between neighboring TATs. And more importantly, TATs are largely conserved between cell type and species. So in a way, we could imagine our genome like it's divided into small boxes that contain the enhancer and the genes that they regulate. So in a way that everything is properly organized. And previous studies, including important publication from Stefan Munlop's lab, show that disruption of this 3D structure of this TAT could cause developmental phenotypes. And the concept is quite simple. For example, a structural variation that could rearrange this TAT boundary could mix the regulatory potential and cause misexpression. Like in this example here, where the boundary element is deleted and then these two adjacent TATs are fused. And now the regulatory element and the regulatory content is mixed. So this enhancer that normally is activating gene B in the limb is now contacting gene A, giving an ectopic activation in the limb and possibly a phenotype. And this was, as I said, revealed that was a mechanism for some congenital disease. But in the Stefan lab, when I was there, we wondered if this mechanism could also be involved during evolution in the adaptation of traits, so having like a positive effect. And to explore this possibility, we choose an animal model that is very interesting, the mole, because it has a very unique environment that create a very unique set of adaptation. So essentially, this is the habitat of moles. So it's very tough, it's the soil, which is very hard. And in order to make this surface to underground transition, the moles need to acquire a lot of unique adaptations. And this environment, even though when they are there, is very also challenging and demanding. At the mole, spend their tidal life digging tunnels very deep. So they need to be strong and also sort of features. Like if we check underground, we see that they have a very complex system of tunnels. So they have feeding tunnels, they have more deep tunnels, nest chamber, and also some surface hills where they exert the dirt. And as I said, this adaptation to this environment come with acquisition of very unique underground traits. Just to highlight some, they are known to have hypoxia resistance or hypercapnia tolerance, or tolerance to the CO2. We also know that they have degenerated eye development. Females are intersexual. And of course, they have a specialized limb morphology that allow them to dig and to make these tunnels underground. And in the past year, we have investigated a lot about these intersexualities, which I'm going to comment briefly. And currently in my lab, we are studying how is this specialized limb morphology. And I'm going to present you some of the current work and unpublished data here. So maybe most of you don't know, but all the female moles are intersexual, because all the females from all the mole species systematically develop ovotestes instead of normal ovaries. And here we can see a section of one of these ovotestes, which is composed by an ovary pair. So they are functionally as female, so they reproduce as female, but they also have this huge testicular part that it doesn't have gem cells, so it doesn't produce sperm, but it has all the other cell types typical from a male, including the androgen production cells, so the lady cells. So what happened is that this testicular part produce a lot of androgen and testosterone that is given to the body of the female so that the female body gets masculinized. So they get much more muscle, they get strong, and for example, they also have a beniform clitoris. And as I said, this is true not only for the Iberian mole, that is the species that I work with, but all the other true moles around the world, like the American mole, Japanese mole, European mole, and so on. And what is very interesting from this trait is that it has even plasticity through the year, because moles are seasonal breeders. So this is how it looks, the gonad, during the reproductive season, where the ovary pair is functioning and is quite big. But in the non-reproductive season, which in Spain is happening in summer, so it's really the tough season because the soil gets very, very dry, so they need to be more with more muscle and stronger, the ovarian portion is reduced to a very thin layer of gem cells, while the testicular portion expands, and they even produce more testosterone, which they need to survive through the season. So in a way, we can say that the female moles, through the development of the ovotestes and the production of testosterone, has found a solution to equalize the strength among sexes in a very demanding environment. And as I said, we use this model to study if the task rearrangement could be associated with this intersexuality trait. And indeed, what we identified, it was some synteny break in the mole genome compared to the human and also to other species that was near to a protesticular gene. So here you can see real HiC data, and this is the regulatory domain of FEF9, which is a gene that is expressed only in the testes, normally in the mammals. And what happened in the mole is that there is a synteny break, and due to this synteny break is an inversion, and now a new piece of DNA is coming in proximal physical 3D contact with the promoter of FEF9. And we also saw that FEF9 was ectopically expressed in the female gonads. So probably is behind or contributing to the intersexual phenotype. And to test this hypothesis, what we did was to generate transgenic mice where we overexpress FEF9 in the ovaries. And these females actually developed gonads that look like testes. As you can see here, that they have testes core and they do even express SOX9, which is the main marker of the testes tissue. So indeed, we proved that the tat rearrangement could be a source of a trait adaptation during evolution. And as I said, currently in my lab, we are working on trying to understand how the moles has this specialized limb morphology. And I really like this picture because it illustrates how the moles spend their tidal life, right? So they are in these tunnels or in these glasses. So, and this need a lot of adaptations, like these tubular bodies. And as you can see here, the hands are really adapted to dig, and they are very derived. But also the forelimbs. For example, if we look at this CT scan, we can see that there are two major bones that have suffered dramatic transformation compared to mammals, to like the mouse. Like the scapula, that normally, like for us, is a flat bone, here is a long bone. And the humerus in green, that normally is a long bone, it has been transformed to a flat and rotated bone. So this allows the mole to have this rotation to be inside of the tunnel, but also it's much more strong. It's not like a long bone that could be broken. And if we look at the hand, then we found even more striking phenotypes compared to the mouse. Like we could see that the hand itself is much broader. They suffer severe brachydactyly for the digits, for the phalanges, but also the metacarpals that are normally very long, and here they are very short and thick. And again, this is to give more robust to the hand. They also have circumferential claws. This is the species that has the highest number of sesamoid bones, which are these little bones here in the joints that also give more strength. And even they have this fake polydactyly. So it's not, they call it the extra thumb, but it's not a real digit. It's like an emergence of a carpal bone. But if we compare with the mass forepaw, you could appreciate how the hand has been transformed into a tool for them. It's really a spade. While the mole hindpaw is more similar to the mouse hindpaw. And I have to stop here for a second and explain that the mole is definitely a non-model organism. So these animals are very solitary, territorial, and very, very aggressive. So I told you before that the female has most testosterone, but also the male has very high testosterone and all hormone levels. So as a consequence of this, we cannot keep them in captivity. So I do not have a mole colony. So whenever I need material, this is my animal house, which are some special plantations in the south of Spain where the moles are very abundant. And with traps like this that we put along the tunnel is how we catch the moles. And over the years, we have learned to identify the nest of pregnant female. But because in these special plantations, they made it in more in the surface, and when they are pregnant, they made this very big nest with a lot of soil, so we could identify. And because they are territorial, when we identify one of these nests, we put traps around the nest, and we hope to catch the female the female in the developmental stage that we need. But long story short, normally we manage to get some material that we can work with. And for this project, what we generated it was single-cell transcriptomics from developing embryonic limbs from moles, and we have data for mouse for comparison at the around 13.5 stage. So we generate this data with 10x, and we put together foaling and hyaline for both species and create an integrated atlas that help us to identify the main cell types of the limb. And we see overall there is conservation, so we have muscle, endothelial, and these mesodermal, mesenchymal cells that include the skeletal cells, some mesenchymal progenitor, and fibroblasts. But because we are interested in the bone phenotype, what we did next was to do the clustering independently in one species and the other, and then do a subclustering of the only skeletal related cells. And we did it first for the mouse, and then we did it for the mole. And when we did it for the mole, we actually identified a cluster of chondrocytes that has a unique combination of transcription factor that we did not find in the mouse forelimb and not in the hindlimb, that we call chondroRUNX2-BMP5. So we saw this cluster that are some cells that they don't have the correspondent in the mouse, but at this point we didn't know if they are proximal or distal, if they could belong to the humerus or to the hand. So to answer this, we established the proximal-distal axis based on known markers, like the SOX2 for the proximal marker and HOX-D13 for the distal, in a way that if you are in the proximal part of the lineage, the cell is red, and if you are in the distal, it's blue. And as you can appreciate, this chondroRUNX2-BMP5. Positive cells are actually distal cells. So it might be something related with the hand. So it's a chondrocyte because they express SOX9, but we don't know really what are the similarities to other chondrocyte cells. So to answer this, we run an analysis of cluster connectivity with the tool PAGA, and what this analysis told us is that this chondrogenic population is similar to other three, or more, it's more closer connected to other three clusters of chondrogenic progenitors. And what we did next was to calculate the differential gene expression between this chondrocyte and the other chondrogenic progenitors. And here are the differential expressed genes that are upregulated and downregulated. It's nice to see RUNX2-BMP5, which are the markers that define this cluster. But we also identify this protein here, or this gene, ADAMTS3, that is the more significant gene for this cluster. And ADAMTS3 is a protease that processes the procollagen into collagen. So we know that it could be involved in some kind of bone remodeling, but up to now, we didn't know where is this population. And to answer this, we did some in situ fluorescence protein, so HCR, in the mouse and in the mole for comparison. So first, we used the marker SOX9 to mark the chondrogenic line. And then we did it for ADAMTS3. So in the case of the mouse, it's chondrocytes that are in the metacarpal, carpal, and a bit in the long bones, and a bit in the phalanges. But when we did it for the mole, the pattern was quite different. So we see this expression strongly in the surroundings of the digits. And as you can appreciate here with the merge, so the pattern of expression of this ADAMTS3 in this population has diverged between species. And this, it was known, this pattern of expression for ADAMTS3 in the mouse, and it was also shown that colocalized with COL2A1. And that makes me think on a historical paper, or a paper from many years ago from the lab of Stefan Mulot, also in collaboration with Dennis de Boulle, where I see similar pattern of COL2A1. So in the wild-type situation, COL2A1 is expressed in the digits, and in a later stage, it's expressed around the carpal bones. But in this paper, what they saw is that they have several mutants for the HOXD genes, and then the COL2A1 is deposited or is expressed in this surrounding of the digits. Then it makes me wonder if COL2A1 was also co-expressing in this population chondro RUNX2-BMP5. And indeed, when I plot all these genes for all the populations, there is only co-expression of all these genes in this special population, where we see ADAMTS3, the COL2A1, the SOX9, RUNX2, and also a bit of the HOX genes. But I revisited this paper from then, and it was very interesting, the phenotype that they observed, because these animals, they have like homeotic transformation from the metacarpal to carpal bone. So essentially, here is the wild-type skeletal pattern, and what happened in these two, which are different combination of loss of function and dominant negative effect of the HOX, is that the metacarpal that normally are long bone, they get shorter, they get broader, and they have this homeotic transformation. And this really reminds me to the skeletal preparation of the infant, of the adult moles, where the metacarpal are also very, very short and very span. So then I wonder if maybe also the hawks are behind this phenotype. And indeed, it was published some years ago that at least for hawks D11 in the mole, it has a different pattern of expression compared to the mouse. So that hawks D11, it was more in the posterior part, and it was a bit more absent on this region. And we also have performed in situ for hawks D12 and D13 in the mole, and I hope that you appreciate that there are also some difference, like I see, especially for hawks D13, where this domain of no expression of hawks is larger in the mole compared to the mouse, and also the region of the metacarpal seems to be more devoid of expression or with less expression than hawks D13. Then I wonder how is this spatial expression altered for the hawk gene, how it could be regulated. So for that, I check the regulatory landscape, and here we have a lot of knowledge learned from the Dennis de Bull lab that we know that the HOXD genes are located into a cluster, and they get the regulatory information from two flanking large regulatory domains. So the telomeric domain that contains the regulatory information to tell the low number HOX gene to express in the proximal part, and the centromeric that has the regulatory information that control the expression of the distal or high number HOXD genes in the distal part. And when I compare the regulatory landscape of the mole and the mouse to a large scale, they are pretty much conserved. So we see this bimodal distribution in both species. Then I went a bit more into detail, and I performed 4C seq experiment, which is a variant of this high C experiment, but where you put a viewpoint, so you interrogate with one region how it's interacting with the rest of the genome. So we put the viewpoint first in the telomeric domain and observe no difference between the mouse and the mole. But when we put the viewpoint into the HOXD D12 cluster, we see some difference with the C domain. Specifically, the mouse has a strong contact with this cluster of enhancer or island 2, and in the case of the mole is less prominent. But the mole has gained contact with this island 5, which is decreased a bit in the mouse. And if we zoom in these islands, we see that there is also some difference at the regulatory elements. For example, in the case of the mouse, there is a CTCF here that is looping towards the cluster, the HOXD cluster, but there are also two other tiny but reproducible, because we have several replicates of CTCF that are facing toward the other direction. While in the mole, we only see one strong CTCF looping with the HOXD. And this is the island that show higher interaction with the HOXD cluster in the mole. And also the regulatory content is has changed a bit, because we have some ataxic data, and this is the region that the lab of Dennis was tested that has positive activity in the limb, and that seems to be decreased in the mole, but the mole then has gained one peak here that is not present in the mouse. And what we did was to take these two regions and perform a LAC-SET reported assay, and we actually saw some difference in the expression. So in the case of the mouse, as kind of expected, there is no activity, and for the mole, we saw some activity in this posterior part, which maybe could partially explain some of this accumulation of the staining in this region. And island 2, it doesn't have great changes, so we see the same CTCF. This is the region that the lab of Dennis tested and seems to be kind of conserved, although the peaks are not exactly the same, not the broad, not the same height. And this is actually something that we see often, and that we face some important problems when we want to compare epigenomes between cell types and species. And I'm very happy that Henrik already introduced the solution. So we are also trying to understand then how is the cis regulatory code between different species, and that this could explain the differences in the activity and gene expression, and ultimately in the trait. And it is very hard task, task, because if we think an enhancer is around 1 kb in DNA sequence, and it's basically composed of a cluster of transcription factor binding sites, which are just around 5 to 10 nucleotides. And the problem is the mammalian species has more than 1,600 transcription factors. So in order to have a cell type that gives a really a epigenetic landscape, what we are facing here is a combinatorial problem. So it's the order, the orientation, and the spacing of this binding motif which matters and define this regulatory landscape. Before, it was not... it was very difficult to understand this deregulatory code, but now, thanks to the deep learning model, we are starting to learn a bit more about it. So what we are doing in the lab is that we also generated single-cell ataxy for embryonic mole limbs, and we are using this tool, CRESTA, developed by the Stein Art Lab, that basically it tells you what is the differential accessibility landscape for each cell type. And the model works that it takes 80% of the data for training, 10% of the data for validation, and 10% of the data for testing. And this is how it would look for a specific region and for a cell type. So in green, we see the real accessible peaks, and on top in blue, we see the prediction. So I want to show you an example, because it's not just the accessibility, but we can go with these models in detail, and then check what are the nucleotides that are driving this accessibility, right? So in our single-cell ataxic data, we identify one region that was differentially accessible in this chondro BMP5 RUNX2 population compared to other fibroblasts and mesenchymal cells. And that was also located at the last intron of the BMP5 gene. So what we did was to take this sequence and then throw it into the model, and then the model has learned that the important nucleotides for giving this accessibility are located in this region of the sequence, and only is predicting activity in the skeletal-related cells. And if we zoom in this region, actually we see that this chondroRUNX2 BMP5 has a specific combination of transcription factor motifs or nucleotide that is not present in the other population. And the program doesn't know about motif, it's only telling you which nucleotides matters. But then later we can throw this into some transcription factor binding prediction and understand the logic. But just looking quickly, perhaps you recognize that these two resemble some of the Hox motifs that are known. And the cool thing with these models, as Henry saw, is that we could also apply between species. So we tried to see if we could work the other way around. So what we did was to take equivalent mouse single-cell attack data, train the model, and then predict the accessibility and the binding in the mole sequence. And it worked quite well, because in the mouse, it also predicted that here is the important regulatory information, and also with the same nucleotide important. And this is... very important also for my work, because as I mentioned, I can have embryos from an Iberian mole, but it's impossible to get embryonic material from other mole species. So what we can do is to train the model in the Iberian mole and then feed them with other mole species. Like, for example, we did here for the Japanese mole in this BMP5 peak, and again, the program was able to catch up the same region and the same nucleotide. And this is this is very powerful at the moment. But not only for the species that we don't have data, but also for the species that we have data and the model, what we can do is predict why we see the difference between species. Like in this enhancer 2 that I just showed you that have different pattern of activity on this lag set, we have the model for the mouse, the model for the mole, and then try to predict what are the differences. So it is very small, but I make a zoom that here in this region is actually conserved for some cell types, it detecting in both species the same importance and nucleotide. But in the case of the mole, for this other special population, it also predicting that this region here is relevant for the activity. And pretty much the rest of the sequence is quite empty, which is also very interesting because normally we clone like 2 kilobases, and we think we don't, before this, we didn't know what are the important nucleotides. And here, out of 2 kilobases, the program is telling you that just a few nucleotides might be relevant for the accessibility and the activity. And here, for example, in this region, they differ quite a lot between species. And with that, I would like to sum up and show you the main highlights that we have used single-cell transcriptomic to identify a specific chondrogenic population in the mole limbs, and this is marked by RUNX2, BMP5, and ADAMTS3. ADAMTS3 expression differs between species and co-expressed with COL2A1 and HOXD genes. Distal HOXD genes show with altered expression patterns that could maybe explain it by the different contact of the centromeric regulatory domain with the HOXD cluster, where we also see some enhancers that display different activity patterns. And that the deep learning models are very powerful tools for identifying functional difference between species. And of course, what we are going to do now is to do some functional validation with some transgenic mice. And just as a take-home message, if we want to understand how is the evolution of regulatory landscape and link it to the evolution of trade, we need to integrate data from different nature, from different scales. So going from the 3D chromatin organization of hundreds of kilobases to the third regulatory element, few kilobases, to base pair resolution. And with that, I would like to thank the people on my lab, and I also would like to thank my previous supervisor, so Rafael Jimenez was my PhD that introduced me to the mole genome, and Stefan Mullos that taught me a lot about gene regulation and limb development, and he's a great mentor. And thank you for the funding. Thank you for your attention. Happy to take any question.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.